Welcome to the Property Management Mastermind Show with your host, Brad Larson. Brad owns one of the fastest growing property management companies in San Antonio, Texas. This podcast is for property managers by property managers. You'll hear from industry leading professionals on best practices, new ideas, success stories, and lessons learned. This is your opportunity to learn about the latest industry buzz surrounding property management, as well as tips and strategies to improve your business. Now here's your host, Brad Larson.
Hey everyone, this is Brad Larson, founder of the Property Management Mastermind. Thanks to our sponsors, we've been able to compile a tremendous list of offers and discounts, with this list expanding every episode. To see that complete offering, visit our website at propertymanagementmastermind.com. I also wanted to announce the Pulling Back the Curtain Conference going on in August this year in Denver, Colorado. For more information on that, visit our site for the link. Lastly, be sure to check out our Facebook group page and become a member.
Choose Seacoast Commerce Bank as your property management bank of choice. Seacoast Commerce Bank specializes in trust accounts and business banking for property managers. One of their best features is a cash analysis program where they can assist in paying your property management related invoices. Contact Allison at 619-988-6708 to learn more. And be sure to listen to the Property Management Mastermind Podcast, episode number 26, about Seacoast Commerce Bank.
Are you tired of chasing tenants to comply with having renter's insurance? Insurance Management Group can solve this problem with a master tenant's insurance policy. Keep tenants in compliance with your lease agreement and help protect all parties involved. A master tenant's insurance policy can also add an additional revenue stream to your business. Contact Derek Scott at 918-728-8992 or visit imgadvisors.com. To learn more, listen to the Property Management Mastermind Show podcast, episode number 36.
Hey everyone, in today's episode, I have Ms. Sarah Durbin on the line, and we're going to be talking about her experience in working as a property management company entrepreneur, opening up new offices. She was able to build up to 1,200 homes in five different offices in four states. Very impressive. We have a great conversation, lots of lessons learned, lots of good ideas, lots of goals. Great episode. You got to listen. So take care. And welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Property Manager Mastermind Show. I'm your host, Brad Larson. And today's guest, I'm very excited to have Sarah Durbin on here. And Sarah and I met each other through an affiliate. We were doing a potential partnership several years ago. I was super impressed by her and finally reconnected with her in the last couple of weeks. And we've actually got her coming to the Property Manager Mastermind Conference as a facilitator. So I thought this would be a great opportunity to kind of introduce her to the public, talk about what she's done and her background. Been very impressed with her, as again I mentioned. So Sarah, without further ado, how are you doing today?
You know what? I'm doing great. Super excited to be on the podcast.
I'm very excited.
It's been a positive day so far.
Perfect. Very excited to have you on. Now, we're on Texas time and you're on the East Coast, am I correct? Or West Coast, excuse me.
Nope. I'm on Pacific.
Pacific time.
Okay, West Coast, yep.
And so let's talk about kind of who you are, what you are. Give us a quick intro to kind of the basics about what you've been doing.
You know, I've been in the property management world since 2006. I owned and operated five property management companies across four different states. And just recently, starting over, relaunching in Reno, Nevada.
There's so many things I want to talk about in that. I mean, that's, I do not want to gloss that over and say, oh, cool, let's move on to whatever I want to talk about. I really want to hear more. Without dropping names, of course, I'd like to hear more about how you managed five property management companies across four different states. I mean, let's really hone in on that, because that's amazing stuff. That's one of the reasons I just fell in love with you when we first met. I'm like, oh my God, this lady is amazing. Five property management companies across four different states. And you were bouncing across back and forth and doing different things. So tell me more about that. Kind of give us the background as much as you can.
Yeah. So I was part of a franchise system. I was their fourth franchise in the system when really there was no system. but I started out in Utah, in a little town called Bernal, Utah. It's a 9,000 population. I was told that if I hit 70 units there, I would be doing phenomenal. And so really within 6 months of starting into the property management world, I hit 150 units in that small market, went on to be about 300 units in that market, which really was the entire market there. and then just wanted to expand to a larger market. So from there, I went to San Jose, California, where I had two offices there. So San Jose and then down in Morgan Hill. And then from there, I expanded over to Seattle. I had the opportunity to buy out a franchise that was actually on fire. So that was a fun experience, cleaning that all up. And then from Seattle, I went to Greenville, South Carolina.
Good stuff. All right. So let's dive into that a little bit more. How did you grow so fast in a small market? I'm starting from the very beginning, and let's kind of pick apart some of that stuff. That's really kind of neat stuff. How do you grow so fast in such a small market to get to almost 300 units?
You know, each market is completely different. People want to say that, you know, you can grow your rent roll, you know, by very specific ways. Every market I was in, you had to grow it differently. You had to pay attention to what that market was doing. And so in Vernal specifically, we still use the newspaper. So we used ads in the newspaper. We were very much part of the community, you know, parades, candy at Halloween type stuff. Really boots on the ground. I got to know a lot of builders there. You know, when the market took a turn, I actually helped a lot of builders not, you know, lose everything by being able to rent out properties and sell those off to investors with a good cap rate. And so we were able to grow quickly in that market. And plus, just, you know, in a small market, your name is everything. So making sure that we were providing exceptional service and making a name for ourselves.
Now, is that a commuter town near anywhere? Like, were you 10 minutes away from a big metro?
No. So Vernal, Utah is 3 hours east of Salt Lake, about 30 minutes from the Colorado border. For those listening, if you've ever heard of Dinosaur Land, that's Vernal, Utah.
Okay. So it's a standalone market. It's not,
it is.
You know, there's all these big metros. You could name the city. And then there's all these little towns you never heard of that are right outside the city. They're commuter cities. And so you say, oh, I manage in Vernal, but you know, you could have been 10 minutes outside of Salt Lake and we're thinking, okay, it's just spillover from Salt Lake. No big deal. It's still Salt Lake. But
very small, blue collar town, very oil field driven.
Good stuff.
Small town.
How did you get the break in to San Jose? So you moved to San Jose. You didn't physically move there. I'm just saying you had a couple chances to open.
I did physically move there.
Oh, okay.
So anytime I launch a new market, I physically move to that market.
Wow.
So with my previous, whatever previous office I had or offices, I made sure to have those under control, operations in place, staffed correctly before I made a jump to the next office. So I physically moved to San Jose.
That's the difference. Many of us are not willing to do that. Okay. So that's impressive. And so there's a lot that goes into that. So the first thing is, yes, you left the big office in Utah. You're up to 300 units. I mean, that's really generating some good revenue at that point. It's probably a standalone business, of course. And then what did you do to feel good about stepping away from that? Talk me through some of that, because I think that's very fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, people that are looking at, I watched it a lot in the franchise world where they would start one office, think that they wanted to own a second location, and then really second location flopped and their first location really suffered because of it. And so you've got to be real and honest with yourself if that's really a good move to make. So it's taking a step back and looking, is your operations functional without you there? Is everything in place that needs to be to where you can just look at reports and, you know, check on that location? And then there's a difference in owning a location that's a couple hours away versus getting on an airplane and having to physically go to that location. There's a big difference with that.
Big time. So I can see that, because what we're seeing, you know, some players, you know, even us, I mean, RentWorks has opened up an office in Austin, which is 60 miles away, 90 minutes on a drive. I don't live there. I kind of live in the middle, but the point of it is that's a lot different than getting on an airplane and going, you know, two states over to actually investigate what your properties are doing there. That's pretty amazing. So I want to, before we, you know, dive off of the Utah thing, you're still there. You had a general manager type person in place.
Office manager.
Okay. And then how often were you reviewing KPIs and doing meetings and things with that general manager?
Yeah. So I had an all office company call once a week. And then, you know, different meetings once a week with like the leasing agent. So I call my boots on the ground. And as I grew, I brought as much as possible centralized between all of the offices, and then just kept the physical people were what I called boots on the ground, needed them to be there.
How long were you in Utah before you made the jump?
Oh man, about a year and a half, if I'm remembering correctly.
Short
so
time.
I grew all five offices over a 6-7 year period.
That's amazing. That's
and all of them were from the ground up except for Seattle. I purchased in, it had about 60 units that were all on fire.
And that was the buyout you talked about.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll get to that for sure. Okay, so within a year and a half, you're like, all right, this thing's running. Now it's time to deploy. So in other concepts, like for example, GK Houses, Matt Whitaker, they've been gobbling up properties in different markets at big chunks. And then he takes homegrown folks from his mothership in Birmingham and deploys them, almost like a military deployment. He grows them there and then pushes them out to a new market that he just bought. And so a good example is he acquired some units in Denver, and he pushed out a guy named Gray, who's fantastic, one of his young, soon-to-be great or is great leaders. He moved Gray to Denver to take over. Totally different concept. I'm bringing it up as like I don't know, it's like they're left and right. So we're looking at the left side. I kind of know that a little bit. So you basically were your own deployment. So you said, all right, I'm picking up, I'm moving to San Jose. We're going to make this thing cook.
Yeah, there's a couple ways to do it that I've seen multiple people be successful, and that's either one, moving like I did, so that you're there because there's no one that's going to watch your business and work as hard as you are, or two, purchase out, you know, some mom and pop shops in the area or a larger player, but to where you're already purchasing established accounts in the area.
Okay, so obviously you had a startup fee, right? We're going to talk maybe some startup costs a little bit because. I love the model of what you're doing because no one's going to pay attention like you are. But you get to a new market like San Jose and you're like, okay, now I got to drop another franchise fee. I got to do this for a startup. I mean, you're looking at a good chunk of money. Did you have a formula to that?
Not so much. Luckily, my better half is very much into marketing. He's a software developer. And so that helped a lot because we were in two markets that are extremely competitive. So San Jose, extremely competitive, you know, SEO at the time, Seattle, extremely competitive SEO at the time. And we were able to get in and disrupt those markets.
Okay. What I meant by formula is like, okay, we're going to need 10,000 for this and 50,000 for that. And you know, you're sure I'm going like the amount of capital you need.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously being part of a franchise, there was a franchise startup fee that was a pretty good chunk of change going into that market. But really, going in myself allowed me to not have, you know, payroll that was the biggest expense. And so I always grew to certain points. For me, it was between 50 and 70 units before I'd hire my first person. And so I'd get to that wearing multiple hats, getting to that point, and then I would hire accordingly as we grow.
That is gold right there, because we see that a lot of time on the mastermind page is like, when do I make my first hire? Now, how do I start working this? And so everyone has this, you know, different formula. But once you get to 100 units, once you get to 2 units, whatever it could be,
once you get to 100 units, you're drowning. If you are a one person show making it to 100 units, you're drowning, and you're not growing at all. You're just trying to sustain, and it's a very painful point. I don't suggest going clear to 100 units.
Noted. So you got the first office up there in San Jose. Now you had an opportunity to open up a second, because I imagine the market is so big, you know, you could drive across San Jose and it might take you 2 hours to drive across city or something like that.
It's actually a very vertical market. So you could drive from San Jose down to Morgan Hill, which was at the base of the market. Now traffic you have to take into account, but no traffic, that's a 30-minute drive.
Okay. But it's still far enough apart to where the separate office made sense.
It probably wouldn't have if I wouldn't have been part of a franchise.
Okay.
So I probably would have done one location centralized if I wouldn't have had those regulations from the franchise.
Oh, that's right. Because they're going to come in. Yeah, I know where you're going.
They're going to set their own ground rules.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. They come in.
You have to operate in their box. Mm-hmm. You're part of a box when you are part of a franchise.
And a lot of times they organize it by zip code or geocache or whatever they decide to do. That's always going to be in your upfront contract with a franchise, and you as a franchisee have to agree to that. So yep. Of course they did that because they want to sell you another franchise.
Right.
Now I get it. Yeah. Okay. So that kind of hurt the startup cost because you had to pony up and buy another franchise to expand. But clearly you had enough wherewithal to realize, okay, I can make this work. Did you have a time frame from office 2 to office 3?
Yeah, I had a year. And so that was also set by the franchise. And I was able to make all of that, you know, all of that work out.
Okay. So then you got to company 3. I mean, yep. great side question here. Did you start new LLCs for any of these, or were they all under?
They were all separate entities. So they all had their own EIN, all separate entities. You absolutely want to do that. Helps with a little bit of liability in this industry, but I kept them all separate.
Yeah. And I think that's smart. And you're only looking, I don't want to tell people too much, but for us to start an LLC here, like I've done it a number of times, it's $1,000, $1,200 to start an LLC. Nursing it is the important part. So make sure you have an attorney that does your minutes every year and makes you sign new updated documents every year. So don't just start an LLC and then let it lapse. You got to nurse that puppy. So you're doing new documents every year. Okay. Circling back, anything more on the San Jose market?
I loved that market. The rents were great. They were increasing a ton. California was just not a market for me to stay in. Would be the only comment there.
So did you, on the buyout, because you next went to Seattle, did you end up moving to Seattle?
I did. So again, my better half, I got the opportunity and we had just gotten married and spent our honeymoon in Seattle doing some due diligence. And so took a look at that market, decided that we wanted to move ahead with the purchase. And so did our due diligence, and you can plan as much as you want, but things are going to always come up with a purchase. So luckily we were relocating to the area and had moved there by the time we were closing docs. And so we closed on that office, and all of the staff must have seen the writing on the wall and jumped ship the morning of closing.
Oh, man. Okay, so let's circle back. Just recap. So office 1 in Utah is up to 300 units. It's still running. Office yep. 2 in San Jose, up to how many units at this point?
We're about 150 units there.
The office 3 in Southern San Jose, you mentioned a city name. I missed it.
Morgan Hill. So that was kind of combined between the two, about 150 units.
150 for the two. Okay, so good to know. So you went to office 4 in the Seattle area, and you took over an existing office of roughly 65 homes.
Yes.
So tell me what happened with the staff. What was the deal there?
You know, the owner of that office, it was a second office for him. It wasn't managed very well. Operations were not in place. A lot of things on fire. So think like maintenance clear behind, a lot of upset people. And so the staff just knew that things weren't running well. And so they jumped ship.
So it's probably a blessing in disguise, I'm assuming.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Because you're going to have to come in and try to train bad performers to do it your way. It's almost easier to start from scratch. Am I right?
It absolutely is.
Yeah. I would rather do the same, especially with 65 units. You say, okay, I can put my arms around this, get a handle on it, get it running, and then I can start to hire and take some of this off my plate. Is that kind of where you went?
That's right. Rough couple of months, you know, reassuring people, actually, you know, doing what you say you're going to do, taking care of things, resolving things. And we were able to maintain most of the accounts there and move forward. So
excellent. So how long did you stay in the Seattle area?
We were there for probably 5-6 years.
Okay. Okay. That's a good long time.
I didn't live there, but the office itself was there for 5-6 years.
Okay.
Yeah. So we lived there for about 2 years.
Yeah. That was the next question. So you had an opportunity to move to South Carolina.
So we went back to Utah for a little bit, but that was more personal reasons. We had an adoption that took us back to Utah. And so we were there for a year. Our daughter was born 2 months premature. So we were very lucky to be able to take some time off to spend with her. And then got all of that finalized. And then decided we wanted to do another office. And so we took a look around. Obviously, the franchise played into our decision. But found the South Carolina market.
So when you say found, was it an existing office or just starting?
No. Nope. So we took a look at what was still available in the market, you know, per franchise. And we did a lot of work on the back end of, you know, what's going on in some different markets. We'd narrowed it down between a few markets and just really, you know, we flew in, took a look at several markets and just really liked what was going on in Greenville at the time. So they've got a lot of just a ton of change, a ton of growth, a lot of things going into that market that played into our decision.
Okay, fair enough. So now let's recap again, because I want to keep the listeners on board here. We've got Utah up and running. We've got the market in San Jose and Morgan City, right? Morgan City?
Morgan Hill.
Morgan Hill, excuse me. Then we have the Seattle market up and running. And now you have an opportunity to take over start up from scratch, Greenville, South Carolina market. So now you have five offices in four states in a matter of 6-7 years. Wow.
Yep.
Okay.
And in the middle of that somewhere, I can't disclose what bank, but we managed for a couple of very large banks in the downturn. So that kept us busy for a couple of years.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's when the good old days when banks would just call you up and say, "Hey, can you manage this?" There's no business development there. It was just like, "Here it is." It was good and bad, because they would give you, you know, there was always the stories of they would give property managers 500 homes or 1,000 homes, and then they would take them back with a month's notice, you know. And so
we had some things in place, so it wasn't that bad. More on our side of things and the learning side of things was repayment. So in Seattle, certain utilities cannot be turned off. And so there, you know, you get assigned a property and you've got $1,000 water bill that needs taken care of right now. So you've got to pay those costs up front and then go to get reimbursed. And it was a whole process. So it's just probably clients that I wouldn't take on in the future, if I'm being honest.
I got it. Yeah, that I can see that. Because you're talking about an institutional client.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those are the roughest, you know, around. Everyone always says that, you know, it seems cool in theory to get 300, 500, 1,000 homes in a minute, but, you know, they're so difficult to work with. We've worked with some too. You know, we had upwards in the range of 45 units or something like that, and they were just a pain. They didn't know what they were doing. We were talking to a new person every month. It's just like, they weren't worth it. So we love the onesie twosies and that.
Exactly. Well, thousands of properties, their processes were so different than yours that you had to adapt. And it was just staff time. So, you know, three times the time of what it would take for a normal management on a property. But yeah, same feeling. Onesie twosie clients, much, much better option.
That was always in our head too, is at some point they're going to fire us. At some point they're going to go self-manage. You know, they're going to steal all of our ideas and our processes and begin to build their own self-management and go self-manage. You know, that's kind of the cycle of what they do. So yeah, it's a rough one.
This show is sponsored by the best home inspection software on the market for property managers. We endorse and use Z-Inspector as our software of choice for our team to document home inspections. We particularly like their 360 degrees camera system that produces amazing views of the interior room. Your clients will love Z-Inspector documented inspections you provide them. Visit www.zinspector.com to learn more.
Man, so now we've recapped five offices, four markets, 7 years. I mean, it's like a Partridge in a Pear Tree song here we got going, you know? All right. So having said all that, this leads into another part of our conversation. So I circled back with you in the last couple of weeks. I said, "Hey, you know, Sarah, we're putting on a conference in March. I thought of you to be an excellent facilitator for us for the Property Management Mastermind Conference, because what we're doing is a lot of small group masterminding, and you're going to be one of the facilitators kind of leading the group discussion for one of our 40 to 50 to 60 group small group mastermind sessions. We're going to have one on Monday, a recap on Tuesday, then another one on Wednesday of that conference, and you're one of the facilitators there." So this is kind of an introduction to you and what your experience is. So let's talk about any lessons learned that you could pull out from the whole franchise experience without having to name names. Are you really okay talking about some of that stuff?
Yeah. I mean, I think lessons learned was I spent a lot of money being part of a franchise that I really shared my processes with. So I didn't get a whole lot from the franchise, but I gave a whole lot because I felt it was very important for the brand and especially offices around me. And so I used to hold, you know, try and hold like quarterly, twice a year meetings in each of the markets with anybody around me so that we could make sure, you know, everybody's up on current laws, you know, operations that are working, operations that aren't working. And that was the biggest benefit of being part of a franchise, is being able to talk to the other owners and talk shop and, you know, talk about what's working, not working.
Okay. So let's fast forward a little bit and get us to where you, what you're doing now. Like, what's going on with you today?
So I actually exited the franchise. So with the San Jose office, I did that a number of years prior to the other ones. I just, California was not for me. And so I sold that franchise to another franchisee that still has the location. Went well. You know, our buyout went well. We still have a great relationship. And then I just decided that some things going on with the franchise I was part of that I didn't want to be a part of. And so I decided to exit that franchise. And so we were able to mutually, you know, exit each other. And so in doing so, I gave up a lot of what I had built. And so at the moment, I am just got my brokers here in Reno, Nevada, and looking to start over here. So going to launch one. I've got a brokerage going right now in Reno, and then we'll be starting the property management soon. And then first quarter next year, probably March, we'll start an office in Utah.
Oh, very cool. Okay. So this is a new franchise. Are you allowed to talk about that?
It is. So on the buying and selling side of it, I am part of a franchise. It's Next Home. So I'm Next Home Sierra Realty here in Reno, Nevada. Awesome franchise. I love everything about this franchise. They are very much humans over houses. I couldn't speak more highly of this franchise. Looking into a lot of franchises, these people really care about their franchisees, and they show it by their actions. And so I've been very, very pleased with that. They do not do property management, and so I will be branding out on my own with the property management side of things.
That's where I was going, because I thought they were just more like a straight-up real estate brokerage. So I was going to ask you, are they doing property management? Because you know how these, I mean, there's several out there. I mean, like EXP, for example, they hate property management. They're scared to death of property management. So they don't even allow their agents to do that. And that's one of the reasons I left the whole EXP experience was they weren't allowing us to really do what we need to do as property managers, nor were they allowing any of the folks that we were trying to introduce to them. So it was kind of a waste. But Next Home is doing residential sales. And so when you break out and do your own property management franchise, it's just basically a separate LLC and you're housing in the same office. How is that going to work?
Yeah. So I'll, we'll DBA it separately, depending on the state, if we're doing a Next Home in the state or not, but it'll be a whole separate brand for the property management. I'd actually done a separate brand in South Carolina and launched that before I decided to sell that and just start over on the West Coast.
Separate logos, separate name, separate websites.
Exactly. Okay. Yep.
So there's a big wall of separation there. It's not just a faction.
Yeah. There's just a lot of difference, I think, in property management and then buying and selling of real estate. So even, you know, team members of real estate agents, I'll keep that separate because it's hard to stay on top of everything going on when you're focused on buying and selling real estate versus property management and all the laws changing and just really so much more that goes into property management.
Yeah.
I feel personally.
I agree. And that's one of the things I've noticed with, for example, Keller Williams. They're talking about getting into property management. They're talking about creating new software. And I look at that and I start to wonder, okay, why would you want to do that? Because agents, when they're buying and selling, they want to be your best friend. They want you to love them. They want to love you. It's a short-term relationship, 30, 60, 90 days, nothing but love when it's all said, right? You sold somebody's home, you made them happy. You got them a buyer's agency, you made them happy. Property management is a war. It can be a just flat out, brutal, trudging on war of years, okay? Because you have to deal with owners, you have to deal with tenants. You're dealing with the most two difficult things in their lives, their homes and their money on a long-term basis. So mixing the two, the bright, shiny, happy, we want to be your best friend, Keller Williams type agent, and then mixing it with the very difficult, brutal business of property management, that almost dilutes that good sales brand to a certain extent. So what do you think of that?
There's so much more in the operations with property management and what needs to happen on a yearly basis versus the 45 to 60 days with the real estate transaction.
That's right.
So I find that most agents aren't organized enough to handle all of the processes that need to happen. And most of them aren't aware of everything that needs to happen to be, you know, proactive versus reactive with property management.
I've got a few things on my list I want to get to, but first I want you to talk about, tell me more I'm having a brain fart here. Let me get to it in a second. Tell me more about your podcasting and some of the things you're doing with teaching. So you're kind of bringing together some information on podcasts. So tell me more about that and we'll get into some other stuff.
Okay. So here locally, because I'm in a new market, again, that I have never been a part of. So I don't really have a network here. I'm building my network, getting to know people. And so I launched a podcast called Reno Hustle. And what we are doing is getting to know, you know, local businesses, people that have hustle, people that have passion, the whys behind what they're doing, and just bringing people in and getting to know them. And then, so we have the podcast, we've got, you know, questions that we ask them on the podcast. We try to make it fun, a little bit about the hustle. Method Man, we actually got his permission to use part of one of his songs as our intro. And so that's kind of a fun story. Garrett, the gentleman I'm doing the podcast with, sent him a video direct message, and he ended up sending a video back to us, giving us permission to use it. So we're kind of proud of that.
Yeah, that's cool. That's very cool.
Yeah. So we just highlight the businesses. We go out and record a little bit of their businesses, and then we chunk it down for them. So we're doing this free of charge to everybody that we're working with. We just want to get to know people. But we create not only the podcast, but then we create clips about their business, and then we push that out on social media so that they can utilize that too, so that they're getting in front of more eyes for their businesses too.
Stroke of genius. Of course, I taught this at the NARPM National Conference a year and a half ago, because I think the podcasting, as far as the hyper-local podcast, to get into a specific market like Reno and creating what you did is awesome, because that's basically an audio blog. And everybody talks about blogging, creating content, getting out online. That is what you are doing. I love it. Love it. Love it. And so I think you're going to see that really take off.
Yeah. Well, and I personally like podcasts myself. So, you know, being an entrepreneur, being a mom, dropping the kids at school, I get that little bit of commute time that I can, you know, listen to things that I enjoy. And so I get a lot more from podcasts, because at the moment I love books. But I can't get through books as quickly as I can listening to the audio on any commutes that I'm doing.
Yeah, just the other day I was chewing out one of our interns because he was walking through the office. You know, he's an intern basically. He's a 19-year-old kid. He's playing baseball at the school I played baseball at, and he's here working at the summer, just being a gopher, right? He's just doing, you know, moving salt bags that we have for the manager's rekey and just running errands. And he was listening to earbuds the other day. I said, "What are you listening to?" And he said some musician. And I'm like, "I don't even know who the hell that is." You're making a mistake, because you have all this time in the world to listen to something. This is your mobile university. So I recommended a couple podcasts for him to go listen to, just to kind of get the basics in business. And then also, you know, go listen to a couple audiobooks. Audiobooks and podcasts should be what you're listening to. You're in college. You want to be somebody someday. You know, music is fine if you're drinking at a club, but when you're running around town doing work in a car or doing something, listen to something productive. It charges up your mind a lot more than just music. And I love music. Okay. I still listen to it, you know, especially on a golf course. I love playing the speakers, but anytime I'm in a vehicle, I'm listening to audiobooks or podcasts or running or whatever, audiobooks and podcasts. Okay.
I agree. You have to be a lifelong learner. And I find not only learning from things that I want to pick up, but motivation too. You know, get you going in the morning, depending on who you're listening to.
All right. Perfect segue into the best three implementation ideas you've had in the last 12 months. I put it on your list so you can't say I didn't tell you. So this is not an ambush. Your best three implementation ideas in the last 12 months. And it doesn't have to be 1, 2, 3, like in rank of order. Just give me one of them that you like.
So I've really been back to the basics. So I used to run 5 offices. I really had to chunk my time out. I was very strict with my schedule, my task list. They were all separated out, so I wasn't dropping the ball anywhere. And now that I took a year off and I'm back in starting a brand new, you know, brand new business, so I am back to the basics. And so my implementation has been, I have a master task list that's got different sections. So I'm making sure that I'm working on all aspects of my business. And then the second thing that I believe in is that you cannot get more done than what you can write on a sticky note, because there's going to always be fires that come up. And so I update my task list at the end of every single day, so that I know tomorrow morning what I need to hit the ground running with. And so if I don't have fires for that day, that is awesome. And I can check off everything on my sticky note. I can immediately go to my task list and know what I need to be working on next.
How are you keeping that task list? Like what platform, what medium, what are you doing?
I am old school. I literally use the notes section on my Mac and I just update it every single day.
Well, that's okay. I mean, I'm a big old school believer as well. And here's what I was actually ragging on somebody. I think it was Todd Orchard. I was ragging on online about, taking notes on a business development appointment. And some of the folks in there, which is totally cool. You can do it whatever way you want. There's 100 ways to skin the cat, but they're taking their mobile phones and or their iPads in there and they're taking notes on a mobile phone while they're talking to folks on a business development appointment. There's nothing wrong with that. However, I would argue that if you take notes on paper, which we had regimented paper, like an actual interview process that we have regimented on paper, I feel it's hugely powerful to take notes on paper in front of people. So you just told me your name. I write it down. Sarah. You told me your last name, Durbin. Got it. It's a 3-bedroom, 2-bedroom house. Okay, got it. Don't paint the kids' room. Okay, got it. I'm writing that down. All those little things about homes that you're learning on a business development appointment, if you write that down in front of people, they love it. I think they know that you're listening and they respect you. Now, if you don't write it down in whatever medium, would you consider that to be rude?
I would consider it to be rude and forgetful. You're not going to remember everything that they're telling you. We also write it down. We've got, a 6-page sheet that we take out. We write it down. But I find with that too, when you go back to the office, you're actually then taking that piece of paper and putting it into tasks that actually get done.
Great idea.
Versus forget about it because you've moved on. You had 3 appointments that day and you've forgotten which house was what.
Exactly. That's how it works. And so you and I are a big believer of that. Plus, I personally think there's a tactile sense between your brain and your hand. When you write something down, it actually ingrains it better in your brain. I don't know if that's proven if any of the other studies or whatever, but it works for me. And so I was getting made fun of. I'm like the old guy. I'm 44 years old. I'm the old guy that doesn't want to embrace technology to take notes. Well, I don't know if you're taking notes or you're Twittering or you're Facebooking or you're texting your girlfriend or whatever. I don't know what you're doing behind that screen when they hold the phone up in front of you and they're texting and not even looking at you in the eye. But if they're looking down, writing notes and then look up and they look at you in the eye again, okay, you at least see what they're doing. They're not Twittering. They're not Facebooking. They're taking notes. Okay, we're really off topic there. All right, let's go back.
Another thing that I find is important that that we do as a family, my husband and I, is we try to do it quarterly. Sometimes that doesn't always happen with kids and things going on, but at least twice a year, we will do. Sometimes we go away, but a lot of times it's a staycation, and we will literally book a hotel room for the weekend, have the kids babysat, and we let all the day to day go, and we take our goals and we review them. Where are we at? Are we on track with what we want to be doing with our lives? Taking a look at overall, all of our goals, personal and business, and just stepping out of the day-to-day to get that done.
Who was I talking to about that? I think it was Steve Welty. He might've been talking about it on his podcast, but we do an annual goal setting session. We did a podcast on it this year, and my wife and I usually do that as well. But I think Steve took it one step further, as they would go to the same restaurant the same year, the same place every year, the same restaurant, same time frame, like the New Year's Eve or whatever. And then he would talk about what they want to do for the next year. And then it started to develop into the next 3 or 5 years. So they really had these great in-depth conversations. And it was done in the same context every year in the same place. So I'm not saying your technique is not great. I just thought maybe you could add something like that so it's more routine regimented. I think we want to do that a little bit more. I think that's genius, having a staycation. Getting away from everything, getting away from your kids. Lucky you.
It's just a change. It's a change of pace that causes you to pull out of all the distractions. Because we also vision board. So the year to 5 years, we actually have a magnetic whiteboard in our bedroom that we wake up to, looking at all the goals and things that we want to accomplish. But it's just good to step back and like, are we on track? Are we too focused here? Do we need to step back and take a look?
All right.
Now what direction we're headed.
Now for the intrusive dig. Are you ready?
Give me
several of your goals. Give me one or two from the next 12 months.
Personal wise is to get back in shape. We took a year off. We had some things happen in our family. And my husband and I had actually both been doing the ketogenic diet for about 120 days and was just getting really good results. I had some health things going on. thyroid issues and actually went ketogenic for 45 days, went in, retested, and no more thyroid issues. And so I really want to get back on track with that, removing diet, removing sugar from our diet for us and for our kids. So that's some of the short-term goals. And then just getting to 100 units in the market that we're launching in as soon as possible.
Where are you at now on the unit side?
So we have not launched the property management yet. We've launched the brokerage side of things, and then we'll be launching hopefully in the next 30, 45 days, the property management side of it.
Do you have a time frame to reach 100 units?
Within 6 months.
Atta girl. I love it. That's aggressive. Go get them. So on the ketogenic diet, I myself have started that about 6 weeks ago. So I'm on week six, okay. Probably lost 15 pounds at this point. I swore off the monsters. That was a big problem for me. I was drinking three, four monsters a day, and I would go home and drink 3, 4, or 5 beers a night. It was getting pretty bad. And so I cut out all that junk, cut out all the carbs, the wasted carbs. I'm a big fan of this. Now I got to give props to Wes Hernandez and Peter. I'm sorry. I always do that. Wes Owens and Peter Hernandez. They're going to dog me for that one. But those two, they're starting up an actual small group on Facebook to help, you know, NARPM affiliates, NARPM people get into that ketogenic lifestyle where you're just kind of doing, it's a mix of paleo. It's a mix of Atkins. I mean, it's kind of like that whole thing. There's some really good books out there. There's a lot of different ways you can just live different, but I'm amazed by it. And I'm convinced that this is the way I'm going to live my life. The rest of my life is following these habits.
Yeah. We had huge, huge results from it. I find when I fall off, which would be great being part of an accountability group, is when I travel. And so it's just easy to make excuses. And we were in hotels for about 120 days. And so all habits went out the window. But when we were on it strict, we just had phenomenal results.
Yeah. This last weekend, I wasn't that good. I didn't drink anything as far as beer. I didn't have any like bad food, but of course there's a bag of gummy worms there. The kids were there. So yeah, I'll have a couple gummy worms here and there. You know, my weakness is candy. And so that was a little bit rough, but okay. So you dropped a couple of notes on that. Let's just say any other good implementation ideas from the last 12 months?
You know, just, I guess, focusing on branding and implementation, and then just making sure that you're focusing on the things in your business that move you in the right direction.
Okay.
So it's very, very easy to get distracted, and you have to sit down and be honest with yourself. Are you busy? Or are you busy avoiding the things that need done? Because it's a much different animal in a startup versus when you've been in business for multiple years.
What's your 2-year goal?
2-year goal. between the two offices, to get to 300 units between the two offices.
Very doable. I'm sure you can kick it in. That's good stuff. Okay. So we got your podcasting stuff. Now I do know you offer a little bit of, you know, one-on-one coaching services now and again. You mentioned pre-show that you're not, you know, actively like trying to find clients, but if people approach you, you'd be willing to offer, you know, some help or some interviews, some one-offs, as you said. If somebody were to be interested in that and talking with you further, how would they reach you?
Yeah. So I've done quite a bit of actually business consulting in the past, not just in property management, things from law firms to dental supply companies. And so I can really take a helicopter view of a business and what's going on with it. And then also look at the P&Ls and find any holes or employee problems that might not be so glaring to the person that's down in the trenches with the day-to-day. And so I do offer that. Some consulting over the phone, or I have flown in, you know, for 3 days to a week to work with businesses. And so it's really just word of mouth and then just reaching out and discussing needs and seeing if it's a good fit.
I like that, because that's, I mean, obviously it's not your main focus, but you're willing to help, and that's how you organize it. So how does
Absolutely.
Somebody,
I've been there.
Yeah, exactly.
If I can help somebody avoid mistakes that I've made or staff correctly or whatever the case may be, I really enjoy that.
So how does somebody reach you?
You know, you can reach me at sarah@sarahdurbin.com. I also have a website, sarahdurbin.com. You can reach out under an inquiry there or any social media platform.
And so the next big thing for you is you're launching the property management faction of Marketplace. What was the name of a franchise again?
So I've already launched Next Home Sierra Next Realty in Reno, Nevada.
Okay. And so you're launching it. What are you naming that place in Reno?
I haven't decided on the property management. So if anybody has a killer name, we're discussing that right now.
Honestly, that was tough for us because when we rebranded from Larson Properties to RentWorks, you have to start writing down all the good idea fairy names that you can think of. And then you got to check the URLs and then you got to get people to vote on it. I did a big drill with Tim Melton and I and Todd Breen. We organized the name and finally RentWorks just clicked for us. Something like that is going to pop in your head that's going to click for you guys pretty soon, yeah. I'm sure. And then snag the URL. There's so many things you could really talk about. Here's a good question, right? We're trying to wrap up, but I got more questions. So I want to know what kind of URL you're looking at because a lot of people talk about getting the location URL. So are you going to try and get Reno?
I absolutely will not get the location URL because I plan to expand. And so in order for me to be able to expand and put processes in place like I had before, so I managed 1,200 units with a staff of 5 across 4 different states. And so it's important for me to be able to centralize as much as possible. And so location specific, no, it'll be broad term for sure. Short and sweet as well. So easily remembered. And it's not only checking the URL, it's checking all the social media platforms too. So that it's available across everywhere that we need it to be.
So many ideas are popping in my head. Maybe I can license RentWorks to you. What do you think?
We'll talk.
Nah, I think you'll be able to come up with something pretty neat there. It's so tough to name things. You know what I mean? It's so tough.
Yeah.
Everything has been taken to this point. You can pretty much bank on that. I mean, it's so tough to name something. So, Sarah, we'll be paying close attention to you. I can't wait to see you at the conference coming up in March. Been a great episode to get to kind of, you know, learn a bit more about you down and dirty here. Awesome stuff. Thank you so much for coming on.
I've got one question to throw at you ask on all of my podcasts. So what is the best recent purchase under $100 that you've made?
Are we going to talk audiobooks?
Anything. Audiobooks, just something cool you've purchased, piece of equipment.
Fishing shirts. That's for Peter Hernandez. He hates shirts like this. And I purchased 4 or 5 Columbia shirts for $50 because, you know, if you haven't been in San Antonio in the summer, you'd be wearing a fishing shirt too because it's dang hot.
Greenville is the same way.
That's honestly kind of a joke. Honestly, really the audiobooks. I've got some audiobooks that I purchased for $14-15 that have just been phenomenal. One recently was called Trillion Dollar Coach, and I'm listening to that. That's really, really good. There's a couple others. You know, one was with Keto that I got into. I'll just drop these right now. Let me pull this up real quick for the audiobooks, and as long as this thing doesn't start playing. Trillion Dollar Coach by Bill Campbell was really neat. Listening to that about 3/4 of the way through. Keto Clarity is a good one.
Listened to that too. We really enjoyed that one.
That explained everything to me. Like that was just like, okay, why are you doing it? How do you do it? What's it going to benefit? How's it going to fix your life? That's pretty neat. Never Lose a Customer Again is a pretty good one from Joey Coleman. Pulled up a bunch of good things out of there. One of my favorites. It's Extreme Leadership. Okay. Extreme Leadership. That's by Jocko Willink and Leif Babin. Now I'm engaging with those. You know what I'm talking about.
I do. Yes, absolutely.
I'm engaging with those guys to come to the conference and be a marquee keynote speaker at the March conference. So we should be announcing that in the next 30 days, 45 days, as far as when we put all these things down on paper. But that book is, and that message, you know, I was an infantry officer in the Army for, you know, a number of years. And so that was a straightforward message for me. And it resonated with me that you basically own everything going up and down the chain of command. And so you've taken that to heart just by default. You may not even realize you have, but you owned what was going on in your other markets, even though you weren't living there. You still owned it.
And everything is my responsibility.
That's right.
Because if something is failing, it's because I put the staff in place or I didn't have the operations in place for it to be functioning. So the buck stops with me.
Agreed. And I've screwed up plenty of times and I've taken full blame for it. So, okay. I answered that question pretty good. Right?
Nice job.
All right. Perfect. Well, I appreciate you coming on. Any parting words?
No, this was great. I'm very much looking forward to the conference. I think it's going to be, you know, fantastic, worth your time.
Perfect. Thanks, Sarah. Appreciate you coming on. Take care.
All right. Thanks, Brad.
Tenants not changing their air filters? Costly HVAC repairs and unhappy owners got you down? Filter Easy is a subscription air filter delivery service that solves this problem by shipping filters directly to the tenant's front door when it's time to change. Tenants actually change them, which reduces HVAC-related maintenance calls by an average of 30%. Filter Easy's no-cost-you solution functions as a profit center to give you back time and money. Call 1-800-308-1186 today to learn more.
Property Meld is made for maintenance work automation. Property Meld will work to schedule, remind, verify completion, and follow up with your residents automatically while providing the best-in-class communication system for your ease of use, your vendors, and your tenants. Begin reducing maintenance coordination time and increasing tenant satisfaction today. Learn more at propertymeld.com.
This has been a podcast episode by PropertyManagementProductions.com. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast, leave us feedback, and come back for our next episode.